You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Inner Nature of Man and Our Life Between Death and Rebirth. This is the final lecture, although there is a short piece afterward. This is lecture 8, entitled Pleasures and Sufferings in the Life Beyond, given in Vienna on the 14th of April, 1914. In this last lecture, I should like to continue from where we left off yesterday. We were speaking of the great cosmic midnight hour of spiritual existence between death and a new birth. When inner experience reaches its greatest intensity and spiritual sociability, which is our connection with the outside world in the spirit, is at its lowest ebb, so that, in a certain respect, spiritual darkness surrounds us. It was also said that the longing for the outside world becomes active again, and that this happens through the spirit, which is active in the world of the spirit. This longing causes a new light of soul to stream out from us, enabling us to see an outside world of quite specific character. The outside world we see then is our own past, that is, our previous incarnations and periods when we were between death and a new birth. We look back on everything we gained through world existence and everything we still owe to it. Two things come before us with particular vividness. We have enjoyed many of the pleasures and delights of existence. This is revealed, as it were, in spiritual vision, but in a way that reveals the spiritual value. We see what these things have made of us. Let us take a concrete example. We look back on something we enjoyed and which has given us satisfaction in one of our past lives, and feel that although it lies behind us in time, it is not a thing of the past. Its effect continues into all future ages in such a way that it awaits what we are going to make of it. Looking back like this, the immediate experience in the soul is that the pleasure we enjoyed must become a power in the soul, which may be given effect in two ways. In your life in the spirit, after the cosmic midnight hour, you have two possibilities, and the spiritual world simply provides you with the abilities to bring one of them to realization. You can transform your past pleasure and satisfaction into the ability to develop the inner power which enables you to achieve something that will be of value to the world. It may be something very small or something great. This is the one possibility. The other is that we may say to ourselves, I have had the pleasure, and I am going to be content with this. I shall take it into my soul and bask in the fact that I have had this experience. If we choose this possibility with many things which have given us pleasure and satisfaction, we create a power in us that will gradually cause our spirit to be stifled and to degenerate. One of the most important things we can learn in the world of the spirit is that our pleasure and satisfaction also put us in debt with world existence. The prospect arises before the IEYE of the spirit that if we do not make the decision, at the right time, to create abilities to do something of value in life, our spirit will be stifled. Here you are again able to see that the spiritual element and anything which happens on the physical plane interact with each other. If we make the science of the spirit increasingly our own, in the sense we discussed in the lecture on 12 April, it will become part of our instinctive life. Something like the stirring of conscience will then induce the following mood when we experience pleasures and satisfactions on the physical plane. It is wrong to accept a pleasure or delight merely for your own pleasure. Instead, we shall let a feeling of gratitude to the universe and the powers of spirit in the universe enter into our pleasure. We shall know that every pleasure and delight puts us in debt to the universe. we shall find it easiest to transform pleasures of the mind and spirit, pleasures which need the body as an instrument for their achievement, or will altogether only come because we have a body here on the physical plane, will also present themselves as something which needs to be transformed during the period indicated between death and rebirth, to prevent ourselves becoming stifled by them. We feel the need to transform them, but we also feel that it will take many incarnations. And we can work at this whenever we are in the world of the spirit, between those incarnations, until we finally achieve the transformation. We also find something else in the world of the spirit. In the present cycle of human evolution, some of our pleasures cause the soul and spirit to be wholly caught up in them on the physical plane. These pleasures have subhuman, if not animal, character. It is possible for pleasure and enjoyment to become subhuman. These cause infinite pain to certain entities in the world of the spirit, entities we shall only meet when we enter into that world. When we are in that world and perceive the pain we cause them, we shall be utterly dismayed and depressed. And the powers this creates in the soul will make it very difficult for us to bring harmony into our work of establishing the conditions for our next incarnation. With regard to the pain and suffering we have borne on earth, to look on the other side, we find these continue to act on the spiritual plane and fill the soul with powers which become powers of will. This gives strength to the soul, and we have the opportunity to transform this into a moral strength which we can take with us again to the physical plane. The result is that we then have not only the ability to create something of value for the world, but also the moral strength to bring this ability to full expression and give it character. Those and many others are the experiences we have immediately after the midnight hour of existence in the spirit. We realize the value we have gained in the past, and we develop a feeling for the abilities we may have in the future. We then live on in the world of the spirit, and after a time, a clear vision emerges from the twilight of the spiritual environment. This concerns not only our own past lives, but everything human which was closely connected with them. Human souls with whom we had a connection during earlier stages of existence enter into a spiritual relationship with us. This does not mean we did not previously experience the bond. During by far the greater part of the time between death and rebirth, we are always aware of those who were close to us in life. But now, as we meet them again after the midnight hour of existence in the spirit, it becomes very clear what we owe to them and what they owe to us. Now, we do not merely realize you had such a relationship to such and such a person during such and such a time. This is something we realized before, but they become the expression for us of compensation for those earlier experiences. We look at them and see the new experiences on the physical plane which will compensate the debt we owe to others, or whatever it may be. We are able to see the future effects of our dealings with them in the past. It will be much easier to understand this if we take a concrete example. Let us again assume that we have lied to someone. Now is the time in the world of the spirit when the possibility arises of our being tormented by the truth, which is the opposite of that lie. What happens is that our relationship to the individual concerned changes so much each time we see them, and we shall see them often enough with the eye of the spirit, for him to make the truth, which is the opposite of the lie, to arise in us as a torment. The inclination that arises deep down in us to meet the person again on earth and do something to compensate for the wrong we have done by telling the lie. It is not possible to make up for our wrongs in the world of the Spirit. We merely gain clear understanding of the effect which a lie has had. Anything of this kind done on earth must be made up for again on earth. We also know that to balance things out, we need powers which we can only gain by entering into an earthly body again. Thus the inclination comes to incarnate in a body on earth which will make it possible to balance out our earlier imperfections. If we do not, the person concerned will appear again when we have gone through our next death and cause the torment of the truth to return. Here you have the whole spiritual technique of creating the urge in us to compensate karma. Compensation is also made for other reasons, but I would have to present thousands of cases to show everything connected with this important question of karma. Consider the following case, for example. Let us suppose the way we are in the world of the Spirit, after the midnight hour of existence, is such that we look back to certain pleasures we have had and say, we can transform the effects of these into abilities which we shall be able to put into effect when we are in our next incarnation. But then the following may happen. We may find that certain elemental spirits are obstructing us as we are transforming past experiences into abilities. This may be the case. The elementals may prevent us from really developing those abilities. We may ask ourselves what can be done. If I give way to these elementals which are approaching, and which cannot endure it that these abilities develop in me, I shall not be able to develop them. But this is something I must do. I know that I shall only be able to perform particular services for certain people in my next incarnation if I have these abilities. The general rule is that one develops the abilities in such a case, but this hurts the elementals, who are all around us, and in a certain way they feel we are attacking them. In particular, they feel their own existence darkened when this happens, as if some of their own wisdom were taken from them. One of the consequences will often be that when we are reborn, we shall find one or more individuals on earth to be possessed by those elementals and inspired with particularly hostile intentions toward us. Think how deeply this enables us to look into human experience and the thorough understanding of human life it gives us, teaching us to acquire the right instinct, which will make us take the right attitude on the physical plane. It does not mean, however, that we say to ourselves on the physical plane, I had to protect myself at that time. This has made me some enemies, and I must now let them have their way. There may be situations where it is good to let them have their way, but there are others where the hostile elementals, allowed to achieve their aims by working through particular people, gain more than compensation for the deprivation suffered when we had to protect ourselves. They overstep the mark, and as a result, we would not be able to save ourselves from them when it comes to that time in the period between death and rebirth. In a certain way, they would then give the death blow to certain abilities we might develop. The world becomes more and more complicated when we gain real insight into it. This should not really surprise us. Let me give you a few more isolated examples of the karmic connections between life on earth and life between death and a new birth. One situation would be that a disease, say, causes death to come early. The individual then retains certain powers which he would have brought to realization if he had lived out the full lifespan. These residual powers, which the individual could have used if he had not died early, remain. Spiritual investigation of life after death has shown that these powers are added to the powers of will and feeling and increase them. After the midnight hour of existence, the individual concerned will be able to use the powers added before the midnight hour, and enter life on earth as a more powerful person, with more character and power of will than he would have had if he had not died such an early death. This happens out of karmic necessity. And it would, of course, be utter foolishness to imagine that we can achieve the same thing by bringing about an early death artificially. You will find the necessary details of what happens when early death is brought on artificially in my book titled Theosophy. I have also spoken of the case where someone dies young due to an accident. If an accident tears someone away from life on the physical plane, where he had sufficient powers to live longer, this again leaves a residue of powers. After the midnight hour of existence, this residue is added in such a way that he is able to use it for his powers of intellect. Spiritual investigations have shown that great inventors have often died from an accident in earlier incarnations. Examples like these show that if we want to gain real understanding of these things, we really have to accept that in the world of the spirit, the point of view is utterly different from the physical world. You will come to realize more and more that if we are to understand the world of the spirit, we must acquire new concepts and ideas, for the worlds of the spirit are utterly different from the physical world. It therefore should not surprise us if something we are told about the world of the spirit at first gives us a feeling of disappointment. One fact which has been frequently confirmed through spiritual investigation is that when a materialist dies and leaves others behind who are also materialists, he will first of all suffer a certain degree of deprivation in the world of the spirit. Having never given thought to the spirit before going through the gate of death, and wanting to look back to his loved ones on earth, whose souls also have no thought of the spirit, he cannot do so directly. His knowledge of them will not go beyond the time when he went through death. The IEYE of the spirit cannot see what lives in them on earth, for only the life of the spirit casts a light which can be seen in the worlds of the spirit, and they have none of this. The individual concerned will have to wait until he has developed the powers in the world of the spirit to enable him to see the matter clearly. He will then see that the souls he has left behind are materialists because they are in the grip of Ahriman. We would be unable to bear it if we experienced this immediately after death. We have to grow into the way in which Ahriman possesses materialistic souls. Then we can begin to see them until they too have gone through the gate of death and free themselves from their materialistic attitude in the world of the spirit. In this case, one only feels connected with them at a later time. Someone might say that the conditions I am describing as happening after death are far from comforting. But people only say this because it is an idea acquired on the physical plane and lacks understanding of the worlds of the spirit. Between death and a new birth, the dead individual always reaches a point where he says to himself, "It would be utterly miserable to see these souls immediately after death if one were a materialist. It clearly is best for all these souls to go through this period of trial first. Otherwise they would lose themselves and be unable to achieve what has to be achieved." The point of view changes completely when we see the things of the world in their spiritual aspect, and a time will come when people will need to have real understanding of the truths of spiritual science whilst still on the physical plane. The science of the spirit is in the world today because human evolution demands that full understanding of the worlds of the spirit and conditions of existence in them comes alive more and more in human souls, instinctively at first and then in full consciousness. Let me draw your attention to a purely external phenomenon, which will show you that it will happen more and more, that people are only able to appreciate the true nature of life on the physical plane if they understand the laws of existence in the spirit. It is very much an external phenomenon, but it is tremendously important. When we look at the natural world, we note the remarkable fact that only a small number of seeds or eggs are ever used to reproduce a life form, and vast numbers of them perish. Of the myriads of spawn in the sea, only a few grow into fishes. The rest perish. We look at a field and see vast multitudes of grains of corn. Only a few of them will grow into plants. The rest perish as seeds when they are used for human food and other purposes. The amount which has to be produced in nature is enormously in excess of anything which enters into the steadily flowing stream of existence to become truly fruitful and germinate again. This is a wise provision, for order and necessity in nature are such that anything taken out of its own stream of existence and of fruit-bearing is used to serve the other ongoing stream of existence. Creatures would not be able to live if every seed and egg were to become fruitful and develop into a plant or animal. Seed must be there to provide the soil, so to speak, out of which creation may grow. It is Maya, illusion, to think something is lost. Nothing in truth is lost in the workings of nature. The spirit is active in the natural world, and the phenomenon of apparent loss from the unflowing stream of evolution is founded in the wisdom of the spirit. It is spiritual law and must be considered from the standpoint of the spirit. If we do so, we shall soon discover that the things which are apparently taken out of the unflowing stream have good reason to exist. This provision is founded in the spirit, and insofar as we live the life of the spirit, we are able to perceive its true value on the physical plane. Consider the following, which concerns us closely. Public lectures on the science of the spirit must be given. The audiences for these have simply come in response to publicity. The situation is similar to that of grains of corn, only some of which are used in the ongoing stream of existence. We cannot let ourselves be put off by the fact that the streams of spiritual life have to be presented to large numbers of people, apparently brought together at random, when only a few of them will separate out and actually enter into this life of the spirit, become anthroposophists, and join the ongoing stream. The fact is that the seed which is scattered reaches many people who may well walk home after a lecture saying, "I think that man was talking a lot of nonsense." Seen in direct relation to external life, this is analogous to the spawn which is lost in the sea. People who have come to a lecture because of their karma and consider the lecturer to have talked nonsense are not yet ready to receive the truth of the spirit. But their souls have need to feel the powers inherent in spiritual science wing toward them in their present incarnation. They may be as abusive as they like. The power will remain with them for their next incarnation, so that the seeds are not lost, but find their way. Existence follows the same spiritual laws, irrespective of whether we look for the spiritual element in the order of nature, or in the example I have given, which is of direct concern to ourselves. But now let us suppose we wanted to apply the same principle in external material life and were to say, "Well, this is exactly what people are doing in everyday life." Yes, my friends, that is just it. What I am now going to describe is indeed happening, and we are moving toward a future where it will happen more and more. People are producing more and more goods. They are building factories without ever asking how much will be needed. This used to be the case when you had a village tailor who only made a suit when it was ordered. In those days, the consumer would say how much had to be produced. Today, goods are produced for the market, piling up as much as possible. Production functions entirely on the productive principle which applies in the world of nature, and this is now also applied in the social order. For a time this will become more and more widespread, but we are in the realm of matter here. The law of the spirit does not apply in outer life, for it applies only to the world of the spirit. The outcome of this will be something very peculiar. We are speaking among ourselves today, and therefore these things can be said. The world will not yet understand this. Goods are produced for the market regardless of actual consumption. Instead of following the principles discussed in my essay titled Anthroposophy and the Social Question, the tendency is to produce goods by using the money markets, pile them up in warehouses, and wait to see how much people will buy. The tendency will increase until it destroys itself. You will see why if you listen to what I am going to say next. With this kind of production becoming part of social life, something will develop in the social context, which is like a carcinoma in a human organism. Exactly the same. A carcinoma, a cancer of our civilization. Someone able to see through social life with the eye, E-Y-E, of the spirit, will see the terrible foundations of social cancers, social ulcers springing up everywhere, and the seer feels deep concern for our civilization. Even if one were able to suppress all the enthusiasm one feels for the science of the spirit, and anything else requiring one to tell people about it, this terrible thing, which weighs so heavily, is enough to make one want to shout aloud and tell the world the cure for this evil, which is gathering more and more strongly and will grow in power. In the spreading of spiritual truths, there is an element which on its own ground must work as nature works. But this way of working becomes a cancer when it enters into civilization in the way I have described. It will only be possible to see this clearly and find ways of changing it if the science of the spirit takes hold of human hearts and enters into human souls. Being able to see these things, I wish I had words of great power and fire so that I could make everybody else today aware of the time which is approaching. These things can only be understood if we get to know the different points of view, considering now the one field of existence and then the other. When we are experiencing the things which come between the midnight hour and a new birth, we have these other points of view, for it is through them that we ourselves must become creative. When we have developed the inclinations needed to fulfill karma with regard to the experiences which are most immediate, other experiences which are less immediate will arise. We experience religious and other communities to which we belonged in such a way that they show us, in your next incarnation you will have to do this or that to prevent yourself from becoming one-sided. In short, life still continues in alternating states of sociability and solitude in spirit, but essentially it serves to create the archetype or model for a new life on earth, to begin with as a purely spiritual form. We have created the spiritual and etheric archetype out of the world of the spirit long before we come down into a life on earth. It contains forces which we may call forces of spiritual magnetism and which draw us to the parents who we feel will give us the hereditary attributes which will allow us to enter into life on earth. I have already indicated that the normal time for this is when we feel we are uniting with the fruit of our last life, which had previously moved away from us. However, human beings do not always reach this point. If we were to reach this point, our life would be such that we should be fully aware of the relationship between the living physical body and the spiritual element. But most people are premature births with regard to the spirit. However, this will be made up for later by experiences which allow us to be in full harmony again with the fruits of earlier lives on earth. Yesterday I spoke of something particularly important. At the midnight hour of existence in the spirit, when our longing for the outside world must be greatest, because we have gone most deeply into solitude, the spirit, which only seethes and moves and lives in the worlds of the spirit, comes and transforms our longing into a kind of light of the soul. Up to this point, we must keep the connection with our ego, remembering, as it were, you were this capital I on earth. We are able to do this in the present cycle of time because the Christ brought into the earth's aura the power that enables us to keep remembering this until the midnight hour. Without the Christ, we could not have taken this power with us from life on earth. A schism, a split, would cause disharmony in our existence, halfway between death and a new birth, if the Christ impulse were not flowing through the earth world. We would forget, long before we came to the midnight hour, that we were an I in our last life. We would be aware of the relationship with the world of the Spirit, but we would forget our own destiny. We would forget our own identity. The reason for this is that we develop our ego so powerfully on earth. Since the mystery of Golgotha, it has become necessary for us to have growing ego consciousness. But in doing so, we use up the powers we shall need after death, so that we shall not forget our identity before we come to the midnight hour. To be able to hold on to the memory, we must die into Christ. The Christ impulse had to come, for it enables us not to forget our own identity before we reach the midnight hour. At the midnight hour, the Spirit comes to us. If we still remember our identity until the Holy Spirit draws near and gives us the ability to look back and gain a relationship to our own inner world as if it were an outside world, the Spirit is able to guide us from then on until we incarnate again, having created our archetype in the world of the Spirit. In reality, of course, we do not normally only limit ourselves to essentials. Just as a pendulum is not at rest, but swings to one side and then the other, and it is right that this should happen, so the Christ impulse provides us not only with enough power to enable us to make the connection. Under certain circumstances, the Christ impulse provides so much power that this could sweep us across if the Spirit did not approach us. True, in that case, we would not be able to make the connection with our memory. But the Christ impulse would sweep us through. This is of great significance. And in future, it will be more and more necessary for humanity to receive an impulse which goes well beyond the limit of what is necessary. Even now, it is necessary for people not only to learn the absolute essentials about the Christ, but for the Christ impulse to become a powerful impulse in their souls, which will sweep them through the midnight hour of existence. This causes the impulse of the Spirit to be strengthened with the impulse which comes from the Christ, so that we carry the impulse of the Spirit more strongly through the second half of life between death and a new birth than we would if there were no Christ impulse. The surplus Christ impulse strengthens the impulse of the Spirit. Otherwise, the Spirit would live for the Spirit only and cease to be when we are born. If we fill ourselves with the Christ impulse, this enhances the impulse of the Holy Spirit. The result will be that an impulse of the Spirit enters into the soul, which will be a power which we shall not use up as we use up other powers we bring with us when we are born into incarnation on earth. You will remember, I said quite emphatically, that the powers we bring with us from the world of the Spirit are transformed into our inner organization. But any surplus created because the Christ impulse strengthens the impulse of the Spirit does not have to be transformed during life on earth. For the evolution of the earth, it will be necessary for more and more people to have the Christ impulse in the impulse of the Spirit when they incarnate on earth. The Spirit must grow stronger so that it is no longer active only until birth, when everything coming from the life of the Spirit is transformed into inner organizing powers, and we have only a small amount of conscious awareness to give us insight into our physical environment and what the brain-bound intellect is able to grasp. If human evolution toward the future does not mean that we gradually bring the excess of spirit with us that I have described. Humanity will increasingly lose all feeling for the reality of the spirit. Earth life would then be wholly governed by Ahriman, a negative spirit, and people would know only the physical world they perceive with the senses, and what can be grasped with a brain-bound intellect. To some extent, all this is developing now, at a time when humanity is in danger of losing the Holy Spirit. It will not come to this, however. The science of the Spirit is prepared to watch and see that humanity does not lose the Spirit who comes to souls at the midnight hour and awakens the longing to see themselves and their true value in the past. The science of the Spirit will have to speak more and more insistently of the Christ impulse, so that more and more of the Spirit enters into physical existence through more and more people as they come to birth. And there will be growing numbers of people in physical existence who feel, some powers in me must be transformed into organizing powers, but something dawns in my soul which does not have to be transformed. I am living in a body, but I have brought some of the Spirit which belongs to the world of the Spirit into the physical world. This will be the Spirit which helps people to see what Theodora speaks of in my mystery play titled The Portal of Initiation. Human beings shall one day see the ether form of Christ. The power of the Spirit which thus enters into human bodies will become the eye, E-Y-E, of the Spirit, through which the worlds of the Spirit can be seen and understood. People will first have to understand those worlds, and then begin to see them, being able to understand. Vision will come because the Spirit takes hold of human souls in such a way that they will bring the Spirit into their physical bodies, and the Spirit will shine even during incarnations on earth, first in a few individuals and then in a larger number. If we are able to say the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, wakes us up in the great midnight hour of existence, we must also say, considering the work the Spirit is doing for the future evolution of earth, even in the physical body, the best there is in human souls, the element that opens the worlds of the Spirit for the inner eye, E-Y-E, will be awakened more and more by the Holy Spirit as time goes on. Resurrected by the Holy Spirit in the midnight hour of existence, the human being will also be resurrected when he is in his physical body and coming to be at home in life on earth. Human beings will awaken inwardly as the Spirit rouses them from the sleep which would otherwise envelop them, so that they would see only the world of the senses and be able to use only the brain-bound intellect. This sleep would overcome humanity more and more, causing them to live in darkness. But the Spirit will shine into it, even on earth. In the midst of a life of mind and spirit which is dying, because on the physical plane it has only the perception granted by the senses and by the world of the intellect, human souls will be resurrected by the Holy Spirit. Per spiritum sanctum levivissimus. The end of Lecture 8.